listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassem.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue right here on 2SER. You can also find us on 2SER.com and on iTunes. This is the program where I'm joined by a special guest who tells me all about their life and they pick four of their favourite songs to play. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today is one of Australia's foremost radio personalities and entertainment reporters. She's been popping up on our TVs and radios for over 10 years, from MTV to Today FM. Having interviewed people from the likes of Sir Richard Branson to Margot Robbie, there's no denying she would have some stories to tell. Thankfully, my guest today has written a few of these stories down in her new book, Unedited, which is an insight into her life in media and what gets said when the mics are off. I'm speaking of none other than Maz Compton. Welcome, Maz.
Hi, Joel. You've done your research on Wikipedia. Well done.
That's what the internet's for.
I completely agree with you. Like, absolutely. And you obviously follow my Instagram. So that's like you get two gold stars.
I'm just a really good stalker. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
How very exciting for you.
It is exciting. I was very anxious the night before and I do this in air quotes, which doesn't work on radio, but we released the book. Which basically was the day that we decided to tell everybody it's actually been available for 2 weeks already.
Oh.
But the day before that, I was super anxious going, what have I done? I've written all these stories about my life. Oh, my gosh. And then on the day of, I was like, no, this is nice. And now it's great because people are reading it and really enjoying it.
That's fantastic. Look, we're going to get into Unedited a little later. Jeez, that's hard to say sometimes.
It's not difficult at all.
For someone like me, it is. let's go back to when you started your radio career as a producer for Ian Dixon and Sophie Monk, I think.
Yeah, so I was an assistant producer for American Rosso at Nova when Nova 969 launched in Sydney. Probably a year into that, I somehow found myself doing work experience there and I got offered a job as an assistant producer. And then as you would probably know, in radio, there's like in survey periods and out of survey periods. And the out of survey time is when all of the big stars go on a holiday and you get the B teams in. And so I was producing the B teams. So one of those shows was Dicko and Sophie Monk for breakfast for a few weeks. And that was a treat to produce.
Did they ever let you go on air or was it just straight producing?
I'm just trying to think. American Rosso would often get me on air pretty much just to humiliate me because I'd done something stupid. Or like I remember one time, am I allowed to swear on this show?
Go for it.
Oh, good. Well, it's not really a swear word, but it's, you know, it's, this comes with a PG warning, this story. So in the radio studio at Nova, I was in one studio and the boys would do the show in the other. But the way that we would correspond with each other, because I was answering phones, is I would type on a screen. Mm-hmm. And so I would like answer the phone, get the caller's information, the story they were going to tell, and I'd type that on a screen for them. And then Tim, who's Rosso, if you didn't know, his name's Tim. Tim would look at the screen and correlate, okay, we're going to use caller one and this person's name is Joel and he's from Liverpool and this is his story, right? And I had written on the screen, because let's just be honest, when you're doing breakfast radio, you're getting up at 3:30 in the morning and you're tired a lot. I had written that it was a caller from the suburb in Sydney, 5 Dock. I had done a typo and I had written 5 Dick on the screen. And so the boys called me and I didn't realize at the time I was just not concentrating. And so they called me in. They were like, come in here, like come into the studio to the microphones, Maz. And I was freaking out thinking, what have I done? And then they told me on air, they were like, have you got anything on your mind this morning? And I was like, no, they're like, did you go out with your boyfriend last night? And I'm like, what is going on? And then they told me what I'd done accidentally. And I was like, oh, that's my bad. So other than those tiny little moments in 3 years of working with them, no, it was never, I never at that point in my life thought I would ever be on air in radio.
So then why producing? What got you into that?
I just wanted to work in media in general and my long goal was to get somehow to television and I thought radio's closer than what I was doing at the time, which was working in public relations, like faxing press releases to journalists. Boring. So I got into radio and I just did work experience for the first sort of 6 months or so, and then I was really good. Like I just picked it up. It just felt really natural. And so then I got in behind the scenes and worked under Nick McClure, who's one of the greatest producers in Australian radio. She's worked on every number one show that there is. And I credit the success of the shows that she works on to her brilliant producing. And I kind of sat under her authority, and she kind of, it sounds dodgy, but she groomed me. But she trained me to be a producer. And I think the long-term goal was, let's get into TV somewhere along the line. But this radio gig is kind of okay at the moment.
Okay. So you kind of really didn't have any sort of skills going into it, did you? You just sort of...
I had zero life skills.
Oh, life skills.
I was street smart, but that was it. Like
proper gangster.
Yeah, I knew how to wear a fedora, but that was about as far as my skill set went at that time of my life.
I can wear a hat backwards.
There you go.
That's mine. So
street smart.
There you go. Your first show was Launchpad, I think. It was a night
on
show.
Air? On air? Are we going to on air now? Okay, because we've skipped the whole TV thing. But yeah.
We'll go to TV soon.
So just if follow along if you can. It's like choose your own adventure. So I started off as a producer. Then I went and I worked on television as a VJ for MTV. And then I went back to Nova on air. And yes, it was Launchpad. That was the first on-air role that I had on radio, sort of. I did the Hot 30 for a bit, but it was kind of more of a novelty.
That was more play the tunes and
it was just, you know what? It was like I was on MTV at the time, and I think the Hot 30 just wanted somebody that had a profile, and they were like, you're cute, you'll do. And so I was doing on-air stuff for a little while at the same time as MTV. But the first proper on-air, fully-fledged, I'm an on-air radio announcer job was Launchpad with my friend James Curley.
Yeah, that's right. And then... afterwards became the Dan Amash show.
I love that you just go afterwards like it was this flash in the pan. It was 12 months, probably the hardest 12 months I've ever worked in my entire life, because we had no producer. I was anchoring, paneling and hosting a night show with James, and it was actually one of the most testing times for our friendship. It was a baptism by fire, because we were on air all of a sudden doing a night show with no support, really trying to figure it all out. So we did 12 months of that, and then I got paired. They nationalized the shows, so they basically picked two shows to move forward, and they kind of schlepped me with Matt and Dan, who at the time were known as the Action Battle Team, who were doing the same show that we were doing. So we were doing Launchpad in Sydney. They were doing Launchpad in Perth, and they moved the boys over. So they kind of split James and I. James went on to do a show with Michelle and Smallsy. It's all coming back to me. Michelle Anderson, legend. Smallsy, legend. James, legend. They all fit together. And then they put me with Dan and Matt. And so then there was another 12 months before we moved to Adelaide to do breakfast radio. So there's a lot of, like, every single year in radio, my job title and my team have changed. And I did it for 7 to 8 years.
And you still managed to remember everyone's names. That's very good.
And I have a really good recall on names.
Well done.
See, I've got a life skill. After all that, that's all I learned how to do was remember names.
That's very good. All right, we will have to talk about TV because it's very important.
It's a dying industry, but sure, we can talk about it.
Before we do that, let's have a listen to your old song.
Okay, what did I say my old song was?
You've gone with a bit of Matchbox 20.
Did I say Long Day or Bent? Because I was really tossing up between the two.
You've gone with Long Day.
Long Day. So I've just got to be really honest here. I am a pop music tragic. So when Matchbox 20 came out, it just ticked all the boxes for me. I was like, there's Rob Thomas and he's just super talented, super cool, handsome, lovely guy, plays the guitar, he sings, love it, great, does the harmonica occasionally. They're sort of pop rocky. I sort of liked my rock. They made so much sense to me. And they were one of the first bands I think I saw every single time they came to the country without fail. I would go to every concert. So if they were doing a 3-night run in Sydney, I would buy tickets to all 3 nights and go for 3 nights in a row. I was completely obsessed with them.
Would they play, do you remember that time? Like, were they playing the same songs every night or?
No, they usually, do you know what? They would usually do one set on the first and third night and switch it up in the middle.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Much like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But yeah, Yourself or Someone Like You was just an album I played back to back until my CD player broke. That's how old I am. I had a CD player. And Long Day was just one of those songs. I just love it. It just reminds me of, I don't know, being in my early 20s and just so full of hope before life destroyed all of my dreams. No, I'm kidding.
On that depressing note, here's Matchbox 20, Long Day.
It's sitting by the overcoat, the second shelf, the note she wrote that I can't bring myself to throw away. And I'll so reach a set for no one else but you, but you won't turn away when someone else is gone. I'm sorry about the attitude I need to give when I'm with you, but no one else will take this shit from me. And I'm so terrified of no one else but me. I'm here all the time, I won't go with you. Yeah, well, I can't get myself to go away. Hey, it's me. And I can't get myself to go away. Oh, God, I shouldn't feel this way now. Reach down your hand in your pocket. Pour out some hope for me. It's been a long day. Always say that right. Well, no, Lord, your hand won't stop it. Just keep you trembling. It's been a long day. Say that right. Well, I'm surprised if you believe in anything that comes from me. I didn't hear from you or from someone else. And you're so set in life, man. I guess I've been waiting too damn bad to get so far so fast. So what's so long? Just reach down your hand in your pocket. Pour out some hope for me. It's been a long day. Always say that right. Well, now, Lord, your hand won't stop it. Just keep you trembling. It's been a long day. Always say that right. Oh, if that right. Go away.
Matchbox 20 there with Long Day. The songs today are chosen by my special guest, Maz Compton. So, Maz, back in 2004 is when you...
Ah, 2004?
Yeah, I know, a long time
I
ago.
I blocked it out.
That's when you first started your gig in TV.
Yeah. Yep.
Was MTV TRL?
Yes.
Yeah, that's where you started?
You say it like you aren't sure, Joel, but I know that you're 100% completely... You know exactly what you're talking about.
But see, that's what stalkers do. They have to pretend like they don't know what they're saying.
No, they don't. You can be really blatant. Yeah, so when I was working at Nova, a mate of mine, his name's Steve, one of the on-air announcers gave him a nickname, Psycho Steve, which he didn't like. And now looking back at it, it's probably a little bit insensitive to people who have mental health issues. But anyway, Steve showed me his copy of Who magazine, and I don't even know why he subscribed to Who magazine, but he was a bit, you know, a bit metro. And in the mag was an ad for a VJ for MTV, and he was like, hey, Maz, you know how you crap on about you wanting to be on MTV all the time and how it was your childhood dream and at 15 years old you wrote it in your diary? Well, guess what? They're holding auditions. And so I auditioned for MTV. And a long story short, it was a process, but I eventually landed a gig as a VJ and I launched TRL in Australia.
Yeah, because we'd never had TRL before, had we? It was more an American thing.
It was totally an American thing. Yeah. I used to watch TRL and go, how do I do that for a gig? Like, that'd be fun, hanging out with rock stars, interviewing celebrities. I could totally, that could be my jam. Doesn't even exist in Australia. And then we launched it in 2004.
That's just perfect timing, don't you think? Because it's what you wanted to do. It came up at the right time. Someone had told you, look, you're perfect for this role. You should try out.
Yes.
That's very handy.
It's definitely handy when your dream comes true.
Yeah.
I would say handy is a good word. I mean, it was a long journey. I auditioned for a whole bunch of stuff leading up to that I didn't get and continue to audition for roles that I don't get. That's just the nature of the business, and that's a side of it that you don't see, because you only ever hear about, she landed a dream job, yay. And it's like, yeah. And I was also mildly depressed for the years leading up to that I was working in a job that I was just kind of doing, but I didn't love, and I had this dream, but it wasn't working out. Like, the backstory is always way deeper than just, yay, woohoo. But to be fair, like, yeah, I did get that gig, and it was the best thing. It was the best few years of my life. It really was.
What about some other TV roles? What else have you been able to do?
Well, I was on Heartbreak High. Now, any millennial listening to 2SER, they probably don't, but you would not know what that is. But it's a television show, so you used to watch it on a television, so you won't even know what that is. But, yeah, I played the schoolyard hussy in a TV show, and I was on Breakers. I did a bit of acting when I was in my late teens, quite by accident. And then I remember I auditioned for a role on Home and Away, and I'll never forget this. I didn't get it, obviously. And I think that's a compliment, but I was insulted at the time. So the character brief for this role, I think it was a guy's name that was also a girl's name, and I'm a girl. I think it was Peter. I think I was auditioning for the role of Peter, P-E-T-A, not the animal activists. they haven't made an appearance on Home and Away yet. And the character description was the ugly duckling, and it went on to describe a young girl who was not attractive at all and then really blossomed at the end of the stint. So it was a guest role for maybe 3 or 6 months or something. And I said to my agent, I was like, are they going to uglify me because I am already the beautiful product at the end of the stint? Or am I the ugly duckling now and they just hope to God that I get better? And she was like, I can't answer that question.
Oh, no.
We didn't know which way around it was. Anyway, I did audition and I didn't get the job. But that's fine. Like, there's been – I also didn't get a Colgate toothpaste commercial, but I wasn't cut up about that. That was, you know what? It would have paid the bills, but I didn't get it.
We'll go back to TRL. You obviously did a lot of music interviews and whatnot.
Yeah, I did. Heaps.
Was there anyone you just went, I can't believe I'm going to interview this person?
Everyone.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I interviewed Blink-182. I was the biggest fan ever. I met Alicia Keys. I interviewed Pink. I got to hang out with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You name it, in between 2004 and 2009, you name a band that was doing great at the time, I met them and I interviewed them. Like I said, I'm a pop music tragic. So for me, I was interviewing bands that I genuinely love. Like when I met Rob Thomas, I was like, oh, can you just say Long Day? Like, just say it. Don't sing it. Just say it. You know, and I just used to completely froth over any interview that I ever got to do. And then also at the time, you know, there was Australian Idol going on, and later on there was X Factor. So then, you know what, I got to meet Lee Harding, and that didn't blow my mind so much, but it was still cool because at the time he was one of the biggest, you know, like that song Wasabi that he did. It went really well for 5 minutes. And so you're just sort of on the, you can laugh out loud, Joel. It's okay. You don't have to hide your laughter.
Friends are friends. So.
But yeah, but you know what I mean? So I was just in this bubble and I was just in this season of music and it just blew my mind. So that's why it was my dream job every day for sure.
Did you ever wake up one day and just think, I can't believe I'm doing this?
Or every
was
day.
That every day, yeah.
Every day. I was like getting on a plane and going to Mexico and then getting a call going, you're meeting Sandra Bullock, and then can you host a party with Kelly Rowland? Yes, guys, I am 100% available for all of those things. Like, it really was a dream run.
I'm going to just take a wild guess here and say TV was much more fun than radio for you.
Not at all.
No?
Nah, because radio is a completely different beast.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know what? As much as, like, traveling was super fun for those couple of years that I did it, it gets to a point where a red carpet is just a red carpet. And so it just becomes like, if you're an accountant, it's another spreadsheet. It just actually becomes your daily grind and your daily job. And so the shimmer wears off eventually over time. And then it is just, oh, are you serious? They're doing the Matt Damon, Jason Bourne premiere on a Sunday. I had barbecue plans. What the heck? And so then when you switch into that mode, it's a different job. And then it is a day job.
It's a
job. Then you just get used to it. Do you know what I mean? And I think the thing that I loved, the biggest difference between, for me, live television and live radio is I felt 100% more in control of my radio on-air content and persona. And TV, I got edited a lot. So TV, you go, you record a thing, like you go to a red carpet and you spend 3 hours there and you interview half a dozen people, and what ends up on the MTV news is like maybe a minute if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And so you're hard edited all the time. And so all of those really nice moments that you had warming up to a guest or the, you know, like when I spat at Jonah Hill accidentally and he called me out, those moments get lost because you can't tell all of that in a news story. That's why I wrote the book. And I got in radio to really explore having a guest, and I feel like it was just, it's still edited. Don't get me wrong. There's only 5 minutes between songs and ads and news and traffic on the radio, but I felt much more in control and much more creative. I felt like I had a lot more liberty to be as creative and as weird and as wild as I wanted to be on radio. Whereas TV, you got to look a certain way. And if you don't have, you know, false lashes, it's just not going to cut it. Whereas radio, I can look like a slob like I do right now and no one except for Joel knows. And that's great. That works for me.
You don't look like a slob. I can't believe you just said that. All right.
Wow, you're too kind. I did actually was fishing for a compliment, so got one.
Well done. So I've never listened to your new song. What have you gone with?
Is this... I love that I can't remember. I literally sent you an email 2 days ago and I'm like, what did I... It's London by Maddie Knowles. This song was on repeat at the gym. So I own a gym on Sydney's Northern Beaches. It's an F45 and they have F45 FM. So we all... Like there's a 1 hour mix every day and it came on in the middle of a workout. There was this song and I had to Shazam it. I was like, what is this cool new song that we're working out to? I don't know why. It just resonates with me and I just love it. It's a good jam and I didn't know anything about Maddie Knowles at all, but she's got a great song and it's called London.
Now you know I'm not scared, 'cause I don't need you, need you, need you, need you. I'm gonna go to London. London, I'm on the street, do the jungle. I'm gonna go to London. London, I'm on the street, do the jungle. I'm gonna go to London. The fear escaped my bones when I told you I wasn't coming home. Yeah, thought I should let you know, like in a dope. And the with me up in the sky.
Yes, that was London there by Maddie Knowles. Let's talk about your book, Unedited.
Oh, yes, let's do that.
When did you have the idea for writing a book?
Okay, so I feel like a lot of people think they want to write a book, and then not many people do it. I had the idea when I was at MTV, and I sort of touched on it before, but I would have all these really, like, cool experiences that never made it to air. So, like, I think the one of the best examples is there's a story in the book about when I met Robert Downey Jr. And you'll have to read the book to find out the story. But something happened and we weren't allowed to put it on MTV purely because of the context of what happened, even though it was all on camera and it was all captured for film. And we had, like, we had the back in the day when you recorded to a tape, we had the tapes, and we took them back to the office and my producer was like, we can't put that to air because it's just too, you just can't put that to air. It's not about the movie. I'm like, yeah, but it's the most amazing exchange and such a raw and just insane thing that happened between myself and Robert Downey Jr. And they were like, we can't air it. And I was like, man, I'm going to put that in the book one day if I write a book. That's honestly where the idea came from. It was that moment. And then I think I just haven't had time. So I've just been doing my little job and, you know, being on the television or radio or, you know, National Drive or Breakfast or whatever it's been. And those jobs are really big and they consume every single part of you. They consume all of your soul, all of your brain, all of your physical space. And so it wasn't until about a year ago when I was only doing weekends on radio writing out a contract, I was like, oh, I'd start writing. And it took a year, but I put the book together in a year. But the idea has been there for at least a decade.
Was there ever any journal work for it, or did you remember everything? Did you have to go back through old
probably
interviews you had?
I remembered it really badly. In fact, if you read the book and there's a discrepancy about my recall on an event, I'm happy to do, like, I can do a sort of corrections corner for it type thing. I, over the years, have blogged bits and pieces and I've written a journal. I'm a big journaler. Is that a word? I don't know.
Can be now.
I'm not a wordsmith, but she wrote a book. Yeah, so I've journaled. So there were bits and pieces of stories, but the best ones you just never forget. You never forget the moments where you meet, where something crazy happens. You just don't ever forget those moments. So it wasn't hard. It wasn't like I was digging around going, gosh, I really need to fatten out this book. I kind of wrote the book and then I probably cut it by 2/3 and then fleshed that out, and that's what we have right now. So there'll be another book.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what, part two, part three maybe?
Well, I'm working on the part two, which is the stories I forgot. Because it literally was, I text my friend Anna when the book was released and I was like, hey, P.S. you get like mad props in one of our Bali adventures, because I don't just talk about celebrities. I talk about my real actual human friends who are better than meeting celebrities because they're awesome legends. And I was like, yeah, you've got a shout out on page whatever it was. And she's like, oh, is it about the time when that Balinese beautician super glued my eyelashes to my face? And I was like, oh, no, I fully forgot about that story. I was like, no. But and so I wrote that one down and then I was like, oh, and there was that time I met Sir Richard Branson and all, and, you know, and then I, and then all of a sudden I had a list of stories that is plenty for a 2.0. So now it's just finding the time to write it.
When you were writing the first one, I'm going to call it,
yeah.
Was there ever a moment you stopped and went, oh, my God, that's right, that happened.
Yeah, so many of those moments. And I even thought I had those feelings more so when I was reading it back. So
yeah,
writing it out, you're just sort of fleshing it out, remembering the time. And then it's a really, it's a long process to write a book. You don't just write a book. You write down your ideas, you formulate stories, then you make it interesting. Then you try and make it funnier. Then you delete half of it. Then you go again in that process. And then you send it off to an editor, hilarious because it's called Unedited. And then they come back with suggestions and, you know, just on how to make it easily digestible or how to make it a bit quirkier, you know, without going away from the truth. So that process, I was back to work mode. So then when I was reading the book as a consumer of my own life was when I was like, oh, that's right, that happened. Oh, yeah, I was there, you know?
Yeah. Did people make it into the book that you were just like, I hated this interview, but it's just a good story to tell?
I haven't hated any interviews. Per se. I can't think of a moment where...
This one hasn't finished yet, so...
when anyone ever asks me, like, so what was the worst interview? I just go, well, you'd have to ask everybody that I interviewed because I don't know how everyone else felt, but I've had a really positive attitude towards stuff. And I think if someone's, you know, been in a bit of a mood, I've looked at that as a challenge to go, how can I break them? How can I make them love me? And so I haven't hated anything. And I mean, I could have taken a really different approach with the book. I could have really just thrown people under the bus and been a jerk, but I'm not a jerk. So it wouldn't make sense for me to do that.
Well, we might go into your borrowed song.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one.
Do you remember what you picked?
Yeah, I do. I definitely. I remember the last two now. Okay, because the interpretation I had was it's a song that my friend, like my best girlfriend and I share this song. So okay. We borrow it from each other from time to time, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So the song is, okay, I'll tell the story and then I'll go into the song. My best friend, her name is Elizabeth Miller. Actually, shiver, she just got married. She changed her name. What's her married name? Lee. She's Mrs. Lee. And I should know that. I was her maid of honor at a wedding. She lives in Chicago. We met on a school exchange program when we were 15 years old. And when we met, so I went to Chicago, lived there for 6 months, went to school the whole bit. And then she came to Sydney and went to school with me, blah, blah, blah. And when we first met, she was like, I want to be a dolphin trainer. And I was like, I want to be a VJ on MTV. And no word of a lie, I became a VJ on MTV and she became a dolphin trainer. That is what she does for a living.
Unreal.
So we just have this really amazing connection. We've had this lifelong friendship and one of the very first songs that we just connected on, I don't know why, but we were going on a road trip with the family up to, they had a holiday house in Wisconsin, which people in America do. They just have like 3 or 4 houses. And it was 8 hours, an 8-hour road trip in the snow. And this song called Send Me On My Way by Rusted Root came on. And we just learned all the words and made up this entire car dance to this song. And we would play it. Drove her parents insane. This was before DVDs that you could watch in the car. Like this is before wireless headphones. This is just, there is one CD in the car and we're listening to it and it was the Party of Five soundtrack. And so props to her parents for having good taste. But this song we learned and now, and then it's funny, it pops up randomly in movies. I've never heard it on the radio, so this is a first. But it will pop up from time to time and I'll be like, oh, that's my Beth song. So that's my borrowed song. It is by a band called Rusted Root.
Bombay Italian rose. Nobody see, nobody else.
Rusted Root there with Send Me On My...
I don't think anyone's ever played that song on the radio. And now I understand why. Because back announcing, it's really confusing.
A bit of Rusted Root there, rooting in the back of the ute. Okay.
Okay. Let's move on, eh?
Who sang that? I can't even think. It was like one of those crazy Aussie comedians.
Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Something like that.
I love that I knew that. What a bogan.
You and your husband, Glenn, have opened, as you said before, a couple of F45s.
Yes.
How's that going for you?
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So we own an F45 in Avalon, which is on the Northern Beaches, which is where I grew up and where I live at the moment, and one on the sort of northern central coast of Sydney in an area called Charm Haven, where ironically Glenn's brother and his family live, and we did not plan that at all. It was a total fluke. They were like, hey, we're moving to the central coast, and we're like, hey, we're opening a gym in the central coast, and they literally live 2 minutes around the corner. But it's awesome. So I had a really authentic experience with F45. It kind of blew my mind a couple of years ago when I went in just to try it out. And then I just got obsessed with it and I spoke to Glenn about it. I was like, you should do this training. I think it's really good. We should work out together. And then, I don't know, like a few months after we were working out together, I don't know if he figured it out or I'm not sure which way around it is, but we worked out that you can buy a franchise. And we were like, well, that sounds like fun. I mean, we're dating, so obviously this is a good idea to open a business together.
Yeah.
But it worked out well. We ended up getting married, so that's good. And the businesses are doing really well. Like, it's a totally different, I guess, it's not a job, but it's a different world for me entirely. Like, it's not radio at all. Running a business, having staff, it's a completely different but really exciting little world. So I'm loving it.
Have you always been a bit of a fitness person? Did you always?
Yeah.
So
always. Like, ever since, I don't know, I've just always loved, mainly for my mental health, to be honest with you. Like, if I get up and go for a run or get up and do some exercise, like, I just feel better about myself and about life in general. And so that's the common theme for me, and being my best and doing my best and being my best self is absolutely tapping into exercise. So it kind of... This is like, you know, the further manifestation of that passion is like, well, I'll just open a business and everybody else can come to the gym and feel awesome too.
That's great. What about you haven't really stepped away from media completely because
I've tried to.
Alt breakfast, aren't
Everyone
you?
Keeps trying to give me jobs. I'm like, go away. I just want to relax. Alt breakfast is on hold at the moment. So we did a three-month stint, a production company that I worked with on my first web series, which was last year. It was their idea and they were like, we think you should host this thing. And I was like, cool, let's do it as an experiment. So we've done it. And then we're trying to figure out what it looks like now because the media landscape it's challenging, it's changing. I think Facebook is about to launch their own sort of I don't know if it's going to be subscription-based, but they're basically going to go, I think, head-to-head with the networks. So there's a lot that's going to change and shift. So we just sort of wanted to put an idea out there that we thought was cool. And we got some really cool interaction and we've got some nice analytics now. So we'll just, I don't know. I don't even know what that means. I think they're doing something with it. And I was like, call me when you're ready to do season two. I'm available. You know, that kind of vibe.
Awesome. Have you also done some motivational speaking? Is that true?
Yeah. I motivate myself in the mirror most mornings. You are a beautiful snowflake. You can achieve all of your dreams.
Well, you can, and you pretty much have. So.
Well, I did, and I keep doing it. I have. I was a guest speaker at a youth summit called Luminosity a little while ago in... Somewhere I flew to in an hour. I think it was Coffs Harbour. I should know that. Anyway, I did a bit of a keynote on just kicking life in the balls and it was awesome. It's something I'd love to do more of, to be honest, and I feel like the book is one of those things that once you're a published author, I think those doors open and people have said to me in the past – you know, you don't publish a book to make money, which is why I didn't publish one. I just did an ebook, duh. But I do feel like it's that, it's a really nice just little shift now to go, hey, she's an author. Like I wrote a book and I feel like that opens different doors to, hey, she's just got that radio hat on, or hey, she can just jump on the telly and look pretty, you know? So we'll see. We'll see. I'm keeping busy. I'm doing podcasts. There's a lot going on. Considering I've, like, somebody said to me the other day, have you retired from radio? I'm like, no, I think radio retired from me. They were like, we've had enough of your raspy voice on the airwaves for now. Please stop.
Stop calling. Is it true that you appeared on Dance Academy?
Yes. Yeah, it is. And I've totally, like, this is how busy I've been. This has been a busy 12 years in media. I've been so busy, I legit forgot that I did a guest spot on Dance Academy as, wait for it, Maz from MTV. I played myself.
That must have been a tough role.
It was so hard. I had to be so nice. This is only like a couple of months ago. My husband and I were like flicking through Netflix and like, what do we watch? You know, like that question where you spend longer trying to find a series to watch than the actual series is. And Dance Academy popped up and I had this like complete out of body experience where I went straight back to where we filmed Dance Academy at the ABC. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, hey babe, we should totally start watching Dance Academy. And he just lost it. He's like, you are such a clown, Maz. And he's like, as if, it looks like the legit worst show ever. And it is for teenagers. So that's not, I'm not dissing the show. I'm just saying it's not built for 30-year-olds. And I just looked at him deadpan. I'm like, yeah, but I'm in episode 9. He was like, what? And so we went and we watched the episode with me in it. And it was, I mean, I think I have stronger abs from laughing so hard at just my performance in the context of this, like, tweenage show. It was such a nice flashback.
Maz Compton, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I don't think I've laughed this much on this show yet, so.
Well, you should get funnier guests in.
See what I mean? Your new ebook, Unedited, This Is What Happens When the Microphones Are Off, is now available on Amazon. And is only Amazon? Anywhere else?
Amazon.com.au, or you can go to my website, which is mazcompton.net, and you can buy it there. But it's just, really, guys, there's a click-through link to the Amazon store from my website. So either way, you'll end up at amazon.com.au.
Yeah, come on, guys. Just cut out the middleman. All right, you're going to take us out with your blues song.
Oh, what did I write? Oh, no, I've forgotten.
Ah, it's closing time.
Oh, Semisonic. Oh, that's right. I was going to put Adele. Do you know what? Can I say, it's actually really difficult to just come up with 4 songs. I was like, I could have 40 songs for every category, and I went through so many to try and, I wanted to make sure that the songs had a great story behind them, so it wasn't just like, nah, I just feel like playing this song right now. So Closing Time by Semisonic is my sad song. And I don't know, it reminds me of a friend from school. Her name's Amy. I don't know, we're not friends anymore, not because she's a bitch or anything, just we grew apart. But she would always, like, she went through a real downer at, like, end of high school. And she would only listen to The Fugees and Closing Time by Semisonic. And she was, I think Richard Brooks had dumped her at the time. And so she was just having a full depresso. And so I would always go over to Amy's house and this song would just be on and she'd just be really sad. So I just have sad memories of this song. But also you think about those of you who still party, I don't anymore, but it is sad when they close the bar. It's sad when they kick everybody out and they turn on the ugly lights and you realize that you've been grinding against a redhead. Like, it's just not a great scenario. So I feel like this song, it's a blue song, but it's also, it's a bit of a winner at the same time. I'll leave you with that image of me grinding against a redhead on the dance floor at Monavale Hotel.
Thanks, Maz.
It's a pleasure.
closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time. Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time. One last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. Take me home. Places you will be from. Closing time. This room won't be open till your brothers or your sisters come. So gather up your jackets, move it to the exits. I hope you have found a friend. Closing time. Beginning comes from some other beginning's end. Yeah, I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. Take me home. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning.